Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Jason.
Hello.
And this week we're talking about depiction and endorsement and just kind of like how we tell stories and how we talk about things, and is there a right way to do it, or are we just pearl clutching when we get upset about stuff? Like the whole broad idea of like, can you show something without saying this is good? Which, like, hint, you can. But we'll get into it. Before we get into it, though, Jason, what have you been enjoying this week?
So, after years and years of resistance, my brother got me into Fortnite this week.
Oh, okay.
I have probably played five rounds of Fortnite in all of Fortnite's existence until this past week. It's not like I'm against it. I think that it's a really great cultural phenomenon that exists, and I do like its style of game generally if I'm playing the right game mode for myself. Just like never been the thing that I played, but they're doing a South Park season right now, and my brother said I'm downloading it and I need you to download it too. And now I have played a good few rounds in this past few days.
Are you playing like the boomer mode where there's no construction and it's just
absolutely
a shooter?
Absolutely.
I played it with the construction mode and I hated it. I bounced off it so hard.
I've done it. I've never cared for it. I didn't even know that it existed without it, but I'm glad it does because I don't want to build things.
I think they added it like eventually, probably because millennials were complaining and were like, we need something different.
Right. And so, I don't have any like good skins because I haven't played, and that's a bummer. And I have plenty of V-Bucks because of Game Pass and because I have technically had this game for 7 or whatever years that it's existed. But there's nobody good in the shop right now, so I've got Uma Thurman from Kill Bill is like the basic thing that you get automatically in this current season. And that's satisfying enough.
That's the thing that you get for the South Park season? Or is it not a South Park season, just a South Park event?
I don't know the difference between a season and an event in this game because
that's
they call
fair.
Them part 7, season 1 or whatever all the time.
That makes no sense. But
the map is South Park and you can buy
South Park
characters. Yeah, I mean the town's there, and then there's like all like the whole map is different South Park areas, but then like there was a whole thing because the South Park thing just started. The Kill Bill thing has been going on for a bit because the Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair was released in theaters a couple of weeks ago. And it was tied to that because I just remember Maya Hawke was doing an interview like during one of the stretches of the Stranger Things press and was like, my mom was scanned into Fortnite. Oh my God, I wasn't supposed to say that. It hasn't been announced yet.
That's so good. I love that.
Yeah, so that's how I knew that Uma Thurman was coming to Fortnite.
And you were like, I guess I'll download Fortnite.
I guess it's time. I finally dropped.
Nice. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, I like it more than I've liked any other battle royales. Like, I've never been really a fan of the structure of it, mostly because I just prefer the like, I just don't like when I get eliminated from a game and have to wait for a new one to start in, like, even just in game modes. Like, it's just not the pace of play that I prefer. Because, like, even, like, in a Call of Duty or any other shooter where, like, there's the modes where you get killed, you're eliminated from the round kind of modes. Like, I do not play them. I just don't like having to wait. And so,
yeah, I would say having to queue up and when you lost, like, 2 minutes into a round is like, well, I don't want to queue up. I just want to respawn.
Yeah, exactly. So I've played some Warzone here and there, but Warzone's map is too big for me and it just doesn't feel right. Whereas this has clicked for the first time in my few times I've played it. So
nice.
I'm sure
I might have to go back and try
like,
it.
I think I won't become obsessive over it necessarily compared to other things, but I'm glad that I gave it a go, I guess. Maybe next time they announce a new, you know, that Palpatine returns, I'll actually watch it live.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. For me, as of recording this episode, I'm just started into the second half of this of season two of The Boyfriend. Did you watch season one?
No, TV.
Gotcha. So it's a it's a Japanese reality dating show.
Oh right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's it's just a bunch of dudes living in a house. All of them are there to find somebody, and they run a coffee truck together. And what this has made me realize is, because I generally in my head, I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of reality TV. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. A lot of it's shallow. What's different with this one, especially dating shows, this is a fairly emotionally mature dating show.
Yeah.
Where everybody is being thoughtful and considering other people's feelings. And when they have conversations, it's, you know, more serious in tone, and they're being thoughtful, like not about the immediate moment, but about their future, and people being very straightforward, which I think is nice in a dating show. Like there's in season two, there are two separate scenes where two different people go to the person that they like, and they're kind of like, listen, I think we both know it's not a secret how I feel. Why don't you just tell me? Why don't you just tell me if you see me as a potential partner or not?
What a concept.
And it's like, oh, that's like some brutal honesty that you're inviting on yourself. But also then they have like a really serious conversation where it's like, I appreciate you telling me this. And you know that I have also been talking to this other guy, and I have, you know, feelings there. And just like being very open and upfront, or talking about, here's why my past relationships have failed and the insecurities that that has given me. And here's, you know, how I see that playing out right now while we're trying to get to know each other. And I'm just like, oh, I don't dislike reality shows or dating shows. I dislike the immaturity and impulsiveness of them sometimes. Yeah. Like I can only watch so many train wrecks before it stops being fun. But watching people just like actually like learn and grow is very fun to me. So I've been really enjoying that season so far. There is one storyline that makes me a little bit sad, where this guy is just very, very interested in one of the other guys. And it becomes apparent pretty quickly that it's not going to go the way that he wants.
Mm-mm.
And you're watching this guy try to convince himself to not like this other guy, and he's failing, and he knows that he's failing. But like there's also like a very like, I'm going to go have this hard conversation, and I'm 99% sure it's not going to go the way that I want it to go, but for my own peace of mind, I have to have it. And it's like, again, I like the emotional maturity. I think it's great.
Yeah. I remember, I think I edited our review of the first season and remember this one. And it's definitely, it's the kind of, I mean, I'll watch anything theoretically, but it's the kind of reality show that I'm sure I would be enamored with. I just watched, I can't remember if I said this on a recent episode, but I had just watched last year's season of Great British Baking Show. And like famously the thing that I crave the very most when watching reality TV is I just want everyone to be friends.
Yeah.
Like I don't care who wins necessarily. I just want them all to be friends. It makes me so glad when they have like the big picnic at the end and all of them come back and they're so excited to see each other. But also like in the weeks in between, they're like, oh yeah, the two of us went golfing this week. And I'm like, oh, they're friends. It's so good.
Yes. There's a bloodlust to American reality TV that just doesn't always sit well with me.
Yeah. But even like I watched Survivor 48. It was like the first season of Survivor I've ever seen. And like, they're all competing intensely, but that group of them in particular, it seems, but many of them became friends, and like you would see on Instagram, they were hanging out all the time for a while.
Oh, that's
I'm sure
great.
Some
I
of them
that.
Still are like, and not just on prep, like doing press stuff. Like they just became friends and were hanging out. And like,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Though they
that's
were competing
what I want
pretty
see.
Intensely.
Yeah. There's a moment in season two of The Boyfriend that I really liked, kind of highlighting that, where it's one, there's a couple guys who kind of, you know, just are having a hard time finding someone that they really vibe with or who vibes with them. And this guy has at this point in the show, he's more or less been shot down. And part of the structure of the show is they run the coffee shop. And when you are the one who's in charge of running the shop that day, you have to pick one person to work with you. And so he picks the guy who shot him down. And he specifically is like, hey, like, I picked you because I wanted, like, not because I'm trying to like shoot my shot one last time, but I wanted to talk to you because I have to step away from the show for a little bit. And it's because he has like a work thing. And so he has to go overseas and be gone for like, I think it's a week or something. But he like was like, I want to talk to you and like let you know. And I think it was just to kind of get ahead of it. And like, I don't want you thinking that I'm like running away from this or that I'm like too, like, it was just like, I just want to let you know. And I was like, oh, like, I love that. Like, you just care about being friends with this dude and that you, you know, you want to like keep things above board. And yeah, seeing them build those friendships and those relationships, even when it started as something unrequited.
How nice. I do think that my little Survivor anecdote is a lovely segue about depiction and endorsement, because when you're watching a cutthroat reality competition like a Survivor, mm-hmm. they're depicting themselves as characters. First and foremost, it is very like clear if you read mm-hmm. post-show interviews with people or you follow them online that like they will say like, I was playing a part in this, and it's not even just yeah. the way I was edited or produced. It was like I chose to go into the game being like this, but the way that I act in real life is not that, and frankly the way that I acted away from the cameras was not always like that. But like, you know, it's depicting the cutthroat, you know, reality, but then, you know, the mm-hmm. even the people in it are not necessarily endorsing that you should be assholes to each other, because yeah. at the end of the day, they decided to be friends, and they just, you know, mm-hmm. they had,
it's like, no, it's like, it's, I was a heel because it gets me camera time. It gets right. me, you know,
it was the, or it's just the way that I knew I could win the game. And, at the end of the day, most of the people respect that, as yeah. long as you weren't like a voracious asshole, like,
right. Survivor is like that one reality show where I think everybody kind of agrees it's like, hey, nothing personal, I will screw you over if I get the chance,
where it's such a meta game on top of a meta game.
Yeah, which I mean, I feel like we're gonna have to just do an episode on that, because that show has evolved so much. But before we pivot to depictions, where can people find you online?
Mostly on Letterboxd at JasonFlat59. It is a very active place for my endless thoughts about movies. And
nice.
I don't think I've mentioned that I on this show yet, that I do every year, like the last few years, like a Letterboxd or a movie watching Wrapped that I make for myself based on the intensive metadata that I keep, that we had an episode on a while ago about, like, you know, the gamification of media, yep. or like I do this crazy metadata stuff on my Letterboxd.
I'm doing that with my iPod this year. I'm excited.
I believe that there were 14 movies that's reviews included the phrase ACAB in the year 2025.
I love that.
Or no, it was ACAB appeared 14 times, because there was one that I said it 5 times.
That's really good.
So you can find that great content on Letterboxd from me.
Nice. And you can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex. And now back to Survivor, back to depiction. Those are different things. Because, yeah, the basic idea was just like, yeah, is depiction endorsement? And I think we agree, like, no, not really. Like, in theory, sometimes, but by and large, no. I think the line is blurred, I'll say. Like, there is yeah. a tipping point where your depiction has become endorsement. But yeah, and I mean, really, I think that the reason when you had pitched this as an idea that it stuck out to me is that it feels like another facet of that media literacy gem that we keep trying to polish, where we're like, you gotta understand how to interact with media to grasp that depiction and endorsement are different things.
Right. And like, I will say off the bat, to put this aside, that like, there is one sector of this conversation that I'm always challenged by when we're talking like death of the author, where sometimes I find myself challenged, and certainly plenty of people in the rest of the world mm-hmm. are challenged by, like, when we watch something, we read something, whatever it is, and we remove the intent from it, or remove the context mm-hmm. from it, which is often very too easy to do, or we just don't know the context, or we don't need to always care about the context. But when we do, and we're left with a raw piece of something that upsets us, that it is sometimes, one, really easy to fall into the concern hole, but it's also like, yeah. sometimes it is like, if it is genuinely, you can find reason for concern if you remove all the context. And yeah. my opinion on that has been made on this show, certainly, and I think that it is something to be conscious of when we are talking about depiction and the fact that it is easy to remove things from context or easy for people to lack awareness of it. But, like, at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is when we ought not to live in a world where context is thrown out the window and things exist in a vacuum, because they don't. And that's not the reality. Everything is a context. You know, Kamala Harris taught us that well last year. And we can concern troll all day long, but that's not having a productive or interesting conversation. And trying to find where the line is between depiction and endorsement when we actually consider the context is a much more complicated affair, but important, because the line isn't always clear. And but usually, I mean, we've said already, like, usually there's a reason for the depiction, and it's not just because they're trying to be provocateur assholes or because they're the people making it are bad people.
Yeah, well, and
there's
usually
much more to it than just than those things, even if those things are certainly possible.
Yeah, because there's this idea of, like, if you're ascribing endorsement to a film, you are ascribing a message to the film. And I think that a lot of movies, it's like, no, you can break down, like, the themes and what it's trying to say and realize that the depiction was something separate. I think one of the examples that you had given me was Marty Supreme and how it's like, yeah, this guy's kind of toxic. But that's not what the movie is not trying to say. Toxicity is cool. Like, right.
And you can read my whole long article about my feelings on that character and how actually maybe he's not such a unlikable piece of shit as it is easy to interpret him as, and as it is a perfectly appropriate interpretation of Marty. But yeah, like, you know, when we say depiction versus endorsement, there's part, a version of what we're talking about is this idea of, like, you craft a character, and we'll mostly talk about movies because that's, like, visual.
That's where this
visual depiction
mostly.
Is where it's the, or and TV, I guess, too. But, like, in a visual depiction, it's a lot more apparent sometimes than, say, in a book. But so, like, you know, when you're depicting a character who is conniving and cruel and an asshole and does not respect other people all of the time, or who in any example, not necessarily Marty, but, like, who does hard drugs or who's, like, into bad things or whatever, that the, like, there is a common misperception that people have that the creator of this character or this world is endorsing that behavior by putting it in a positive light. Because Marty Supreme is a complicated example, obviously, where, like, sometimes his antics are being shown as heroic and cool and fun, and sometimes they're being showed as actually all of the things you were doing were really stupid and messed up your whole life. But, like, this, it's a wonderfully complicated movie. Sometimes you have, like, I don't know, a super bad, and these kids are little assholes and doing nasty things to people or whatever. And so, like, you know, is that endorsing the behavior of teenagers being shitheads?
That actually goes into what, because, so I was trying to rack my brain for, like, what are the movies where this is a thing? And I think one that really jumped out for me, and I think that Superbad sits in the same spot, is Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Sure.
Because there has been this more recent push of, like, Ferris is actually a bad person and a bad friend and da-da-da-da. And that's fundamentally misunderstanding the function of that movie. It is not a morality tale. It is a modern American fairy tale. It is urban legend, basically. I mean, it even starts off with, like, the my brother's girlfriend's sister's whatever saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night. And it's like, that alone tells you that this kid exists in a mythic state, even in his own reality. He is supposed to be a character who is just having fun. And then people looked at Cameron, who is the straight man, and conflated that with him being the grounded real character. And, like, he is a more grounded character than Ferris, but, like, his sister is also a grounded character who hates her brother, but she has a little bit more fun, so people don't latch onto her in that narrative. And that's not to say that Ferris is an excusable character. He does some bad stuff. He's not a great person, but that's not the point of the movie. The point is, like, wouldn't it be crazy and fun if you skipped school for a day and you did all this wild stuff? That's the function of the movie. It is a legend.
Right. Well,
but
like,
people like to do this, like, this post analysis and shift their focus and their perspective to a character who is not the main character and be like, no, he's the main character, and him being the main character makes that a bad character.
Right. But even, like, whether it's, we'll use this example, but even, it doesn't even have to be like something that is from longer ago. But like, the thing to me is, so what if you recognize that Ferris is a bad friend? Congratulations, you've realized that he was a bad friend. Does that make the movie less entertaining? Does that make, like, maybe part of the lesson is that he's a bad friend?
Yeah.
And while we might have a different context for how we see his bad friendship today versus how we might have seen his bad friendship in 1985, like, I don't think people in 1985 were looking at him like he was the greatest friend of all time then either. That's not, like, his character is not designed to be a good friend. The fact that he isn't is part of, like, we can take that and you know, modern context at all we want, and like, great. Like, to me, like, it's actually part of the beauty of watching something that was imperfect at the time is that you can look back on it and say, with a new frame of mind, like, this is the problem that the character had, and that's actually why the thing that happens in this movie happens the way it does, in a way that maybe we couldn't have understood at the time, like, because we just didn't have the sociology understanding of, like, how these people were interacting with each other. Versus, like, you know, another teen movie of the time, 16 Candles, like, that is a movie where there's some super racist depictions of what I can't remember the character's name. It doesn't even matter. His name is racist.
I was like, I know the name, and it's racist.
Yeah, but like, there's this, you know, terrible Chinese caricature teenage character who not only is like doing these things that are racist caricature things, but also then like is going around looking at women in the shower. Like, these are things that even there, I wonder, I can't really know, I wasn't there, but like, I wonder, did people then watch this and go, that's good? Like, maybe the racist part aside, that, but like the, like, were they seeing him going and looking at women in the shower and saying that's a model of a good character? Like, I don't think so.
No.
Maybe like the way that it was being laughed at might have been different then. And I, you know, I don't really love that movie because it is kind of hard to swallow, but it's not like categorically that kind of thing should never be watched again or never be done again today. We do make movies that have, you know, more modern versions of this. God, I can't remember what the name of it was. There was that Jennifer Lawrence movie like 2 years ago where she was dating.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The one where she's paid to sleep with a nerd.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, there.
And that's not even a far-fetched description of the movie.
No, it's literally what the movie's about. And there's a whole scene where she like goes, like, gets into a naked fight on the beach or something. I don't remember exactly. But it's like, you know, the modern version of that kind of lewd comedy that I'm sure another 20 years we might look back at and why that was reasons why we could say that that was inappropriate or whatever at the time. I don't know. But the point being, like, when we're depicting these things that we know to be unsavory in retrospect or even in the moment, like, they're not inherently problematic just because it was depicted.
Yeah.
If they're
the one that I will say, what, because I was trying to rack my brain, is, and it's one, it's another one where, again, we only picked up on it more recently and like have people, you know, posting online and reposting, is The Notebook. And the fact that he's like, if you don't go on a date with me, I'm going to kill myself. And people are like, what a romantic movie.
Right.
And that one, I'm like, that did feel a little like endorsement that worked and was seen as a good, successful relationship.
Look, and that was made in a time where Tumblr was king and, like, you know, suicidal ideation was, you know, romanticized. So that was I get in the context of the time, it wasn't really considered problematic because everyone was saying shit like that and everyone was romanticizing shit like that. And like, yes, we can look back on it now and be like, no, those were bad things that we were romanticizing. But within the context of that time, saying something like that was not like you weren't actually endorsing suicide. You weren't actually endorsing, like, you know, people should behave this way. You were just picking up on the way that people spoke at the time and the way that culture talked about these things. And like, if you did that now, would it be different? 100%.
Yeah.
But it would be different because it would be cringy and it would be uncouth and unrelatable to today's, like, I mean, well, there are versions of that that people say all the time now too, but it's different versions of it. But like, I think you could, well, now that I'm thinking about it, yeah, the kids are saying, you know, I'm gonna kill myself all the time still these days. It actually came back into fashion in the last few years. And if you had a version of it that was in a movie that fit the way that kids talk right now, it could bug me depending on like the context it's used in, but it doesn't necessarily have to just because people say that all the time. Yeah. It doesn't mean, I mean anything.
There are people who I think genuinely just think the idea of saying I'm going to blow my brains out to a minor inconvenience is funny because it's the phrase blow my brains out is a funny phrase to them. And saying it to something small is funny to that, like as an overreaction.
Right.
And like, but like, it's not endorsing it.
Right. And like, let's be clear. Like, this is me, the person who hated Paddington in Peru because there was a colonizer trying to find El Dorado. Like, that's not an appropriate context for a children's movie to me, because not because it's endorsing something. Well, because it is to me, like a plot, like by choosing to make that the plot of your movie, it is a tacit endorsement of like the El Dorado myth, and the El Dorado myth is bad and we should not use it in modern parlance like that. But again, that's like that's a different side of this than what we're talking about.
Well, I think that is an important part of it, though, is that there is, in terms of the endorsement depiction conversation, there is this idea of, if there is people misinterpreting a lack of strong consequence as a, this is good.
Right.
And it's like, no, people get away with crap in movies all the time. The movie doesn't say this is good. It's not rewarding them for it. It's just, and I think this happens in kids' movies more than anything.
Yes.
Raya and the Last Dragon comes to mind, where people are like, oh, she just forgives her. And it literally, it's just that the villain gets forgiven and they team up because it's a Disney movie made in the 21st century.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think that that's an endorsement of what she did, or that there it's a problem that she didn't have a more severe consequence.
That's just an overthinking of it.
Yeah,
sure.
But I see a lot of like that mentality of like, I don't like that this person didn't get a bigger punishment.
Right. I agree that whether it's kids' movies or not, like we need to depict consequences for our actions, because this is a huge thing of mine. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but like I have a huge thing about shame lately, and how like there's shame and there's being ashamed. Being ashamed is when you are like self-loathing and you are you know, internalizing your behaviors as like, I am the problem, and now you're like, you know, you're hating on yourself. That's not the good thing. The good thing that we are missing in our society is the positive value of shame, where you recognize that your actions have consequences beyond that impact yourself and others, and especially others. And whether it's because we are coddled liberals who don't understand shame, or because we're, you know, assholes who don't understand shame, we don't have shame anymore. And so like, we deeply need to have representation of consequences to our actions in our media, so that but that doesn't mean that we can't also endorse forgiveness when it's appropriate too, which is obviously the thing that we skip right to in a lot of these movies.
And you know, it's a great balance of this.
Yeah.
In terms of doing a good job with all of this is Atlantis, The Lost Empire, where the villain gets got real good. The other people who are helping the villain have that like come to Jesus moment and realize that they're in the wrong, and they change allegiances, and they don't get punished.
It's a classic
for it,
Disney move.
But they acknowledge, they're like, oh, I shouldn't have been helping him. But that dude who messed up, he fucking dies. Like, it's, you know, it's bad for him.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is a nice handling of this. It's like, we're not going to wipe away that he was going to genocide a whole people. We're going to very much acknowledge that and kill him for it.
Right. I mean, this is getting a little, veering a bit off topic, but this one comes up all the time when you talk about Darth Vader, right? Like, was it enough for Darth Vader just to kill the Emperor that he can be forgiven? Or can you, like, what was it? Is it impossible for that character to actually be redeemed because he died and couldn't repent for the, like, things that he did wrong, right? And this is an extreme example of someone who genocided, you know, billions of planets or whatever. But, like, when super down a rabbit hole here, obviously. But, like, yeah, when we show the bad guys in the movie becoming, like, realizing they were on the wrong side, I'm going to be critical of, like, did they do something to make up for what they did wrong, or are they just magically forgiven? Because I believe strongly that there is an important part of forgiveness is, you know, correcting your behavior and also like, you know, making up for what you did wrong. Like, you got to pay reparations in some form, to, like, it's not enough just to say I'm sorry and change your behavior. You have to compensate for the thing you did. And that's all of that, you know, bringing it back to the original point of, like, we often, it's not an issue of, like, endorsement, because it is very clear that this is the bad thing and this is the right thing. Getting hung up on whether you're seeing consequences or repentance is fair, but it doesn't mean, like, because it didn't happen that this character is totally invalidated forever. I'm gonna, like, maybe strike the movie a point or whatever in my review, perhaps, depending on the context of the movie, but, like,
yeah, how egregious is it?
The issue is not, like, you know, where people will tend to jump straight to of, like, oh, how could we ever even consider that this is a good ending when we're now saying that everything this character did was fine because we didn't see that there was consequences. Like, yes, I want to see the consequences, but it's a kid's movie most of the time. Even if it's not, it's a movie. Like, we can assume that what they did that was bad, and we're not just covering it up. Like, it's just a movie at the end of the day. Like, we're not, just because they did bad things and we aren't watching them make up for it, doesn't mean that the people that made this movie think their bad things were actually not so bad after all.
Yeah, I think in endorsement in media or in your storytelling, is it's not enough just that it's included. Like, you have to be very enthusiastically saying, and this is good and right. Like, that's an endorsement. I think a good example, and why I think media literacy is such a part of this conversation, is what I labeled the 21st century misunderstood character gang, which is Joker and Walter White and Rick Sanchez and, like, all of these characters that people are like, oh, he's so cool and da-da. It's like, if you watch Breaking Bad, Walter White is not the hero. Like, Walter White is is a villain. He's one of many villains. And just because he takes out other villains doesn't make him the good guy. You can watch Joker and, you know, you can sympathize with this dude who's had a really hard life. That doesn't justify his actions. Like, that misinterpretation is where I think the endorsement conversation gets really interesting, because the movie's not endorsing it. People are just getting the wrong message.
Right. Exactly. Like, I think it's pretty likely that the person who thinks that those characters are actually good and we should follow their lead are probably more of a straw man than a real person more often than not.
Right. It's rare. People have Scarface posters in their dorm because they think it looks cool, not because idolize Scarface.
Which is, like, I feel like an issue unto itself, of that we are so quick, not we personally, but just, like, culturally, we're so quick to see the Joker in the 2019 movie, at least, and go, oh my God, panic, because people are going to see that character and get the wrong idea. And it turned out that nobody got the wrong idea from that character. There was no examples of people going on violent sprees or taking politics after that character, or, you know, anything that is in the realm of at least what that character is in that movie and following his example. What did happen was people getting ultra defensive about the movie and about mm-hmm. the people making it and creating a sort of cult of personality around the existence of it, and then starting to like defend the theoretical behavior of creating a character like this, even though mm-hmm. that's not what the character was in the first place. And so yeah. like that's where it becomes weird to me, because now you're like, you're saying that we shouldn't endorse this character, and yet you're the one that's almost endorsing it. Like, you're obviously you're not following it or agreeing with it, but you are now saying that like you have created the monstrous context for it where it might not have existed otherwise. And that's where it gets concerning, especially to me, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. Well, especially, I think actually an example where people maybe did actually like buy into it a little bit more than they should have would be like Gordon Gekko and Jordan Belfort, like these like Wall Street figures, and like, isn't it cool to like scam people and make money and like all this stuff? And like Wolf of Wall Street inspired not a bunch of people to get into economics, but it inspired people to pursue a certain aesthetic and lifestyle. And it's like, you missed the point of that movie. Like I don't think that it's wrong
Scorsese
to make a movie.
Has a long term streak of that.
Oh yeah, of making a movie that people are like, is this tacit endorsement? And it's like, no, it's like, an examination of the human condition.
Who's the one that saw De Niro in Taxi Driver and then like did something bad because of it?
Yeah,
like that, you know. And I there is a whole article on the website about that I wrote about Scorsese and masculinity and the way, yeah, because he's a perfect example of it. Every movie he made for decades and decades, all the way up until Killer of the Flower Moon, was just like one more step further of like, guys, I don't think that these are good people.
Yeah, just getting like a little firmer with that point every time.
And even with Killers of the Flower Moon, people still don't get it.
Yeah.
But especially with Wolf of Wall Street, you know, there's a certain kind of person that watches people doing crazy drugs off of people's bare chests and says, that could be me. And maybe I'll get away with the crime, even though he couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just an interesting thing because, yeah, whether or not a movie endorses something is so much in the viewer's estimation, at least as far as the discourse goes. Like, the director can be clear as day of like, hey, guys, this is not good. He's not a good person. They're a bad character. Like, they are just the main character, which I think that's, again, going to the media literacy thing, that very basic understanding of protagonist is a literary term, not a character type. You can be a protagonist and be a villain.
Right.
Like, it's, yeah.
You can be a protagonist who is a smarmy piece of shit and is not likable, as people, you know, people want their characters to be likable. And when I think about likability, it's not that I want you to always, like, yes, in my heart of hearts, I want you to be the nicest person all the time. That's just like my MO. But like, do I need my characters to all be good people all the time? Of course not. It's the difference between like, are you a character who's written to be an asshole, but like you're the propelling the plot and this thing is compelling, or are you just intolerable to spend time with? Because like, I'm famously really not a fan of Uncut Gems because I find Howie so intolerable to spend time with that like I just can't stand him. And I get why people like this movie. It's certainly not, I mean, I have problems with the Passover scene, but I like don't I don't fault people for liking the movie at all. I get it. But just like for me, like my tolerance of his behavior and his character is just I just can't watch him because it's so aggravating after a while to me.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I think that he's a character who shouldn't exist. Like he is so compelling as a concept. I wish that I could tolerate it. And I wish that the Passover scene didn't feel so anti-Semitic, but that's a different problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about like looking at my movie shelf and it's like so many of these movies, I could pick out one moment or one moral and be like, oh, this isn't like Toy Story is like, oh, this is actually validating being controlling and manipulative as long as you kind of make good by the end of it.
Right.
Like where it's like, no, it's like
about anything if we want
yeah,
to.
Or you can step back and be like, oh, no, Woody's acting from a place of deep insecurity. And that's all it is. It is not saying that it is good to manipulate people or to try to kill people or, you know, any of that. It's literally just saying like, hey, yeah, like sometimes things are hard.
I guess, you know, talking about Woody is bringing me to one of my regularly favorite subjects of how I can't stand young Tom Hanks. And this is, it's given me, I guess, a category of another category of depiction that is meant to be endorsement that I just don't jive with, where like, you know, this is probably true of rom-coms of all time periods, but especially those like 80s, 90s rom-coms where you've got your Tom Hankses, you've got your Bill Murrays, you've got, you know, these angry men who are mean to people and they yell a lot, but they're also funny and kind of charming and sweet on some level, right? And like to me, when I watch these things, I am rubbed really the wrong way personally. If other people like these characters, sure, it means I might not, you know, be interested in you either. But that's different than it being outright inappropriate. But like when I watch some of these rom-coms, you know, Groundhog's Day is a big one for me of like, this is endorsement because you are purposefully writing the character the way you're choosing to, of being an asshole who is, even by the end, still an asshole. But that's supposed to be charming, apparently. And like, yeah, it's true of Ron Burgundy, you know, in a lot of ways too, right? Different kind of movie and a different kind of asshole. But like, bothers me less, I guess, because when he yells, it's in a glass case of emotion and not, it's just something different about it. But anyway, like, you know, this is endorsement because you're writing the character purposefully as like with the intention of, I think that these are good qualities ultimately. And I guess maybe the Ron Burgundy example is different because we are supposed to think he's an asshole. And the guy in same with Groundhog's Day, he's supposed to be an asshole, but the difference is like I don't think that
they don't learn and grow.
They learn and grow different ways. And I'm obviously nitpicking just based on my personal preference, but what I'm trying to say is like when we have especially like a romantic lead, I think there is an endorsement of their behaviors because that is meant to be what is attractive about them. And whether being someone who yells a lot is apparently attractive in the 1980s aside, like it's not like every time you are depicting something unsavory, it's not on purpose. It's just like, that is my opinion that it's unsavory. And maybe a lot of us might agree at the end of the day. And then we go, actually, maybe this just wasn't a good movie or wasn't a good character or didn't hold up well. That's an okay thing to recognize as time goes on or as we're watching things even right now, that like, maybe you are endorsing it and I just don't agree with you. But other people might agree with you, and it's not that the thing you're doing is problematic inherently. I mean, sometimes it could be, I guess, but like these are characters that other people might enjoy and you might endorse or you might agree with the endorsement because that's something you just jive with. And I think I get hung up on this myself, where I will sometimes be like, how could you possibly like Splash because Tom Hanks is such a dick? But like, you know, I'm probably being overdramatic and when I am being, you know, real about it and not just letterbox brained, like No, this is just, this is an opinion piece of it.
It's
ultimately.
Yeah. And I think it's, yeah, it's opinion. And it's this question of like, ultimately, it's how much do you want to moralize and nitpick the things that you watch? Like, how many pearls are you going to clutch about that thing? Or are you just going to kind of watch it? And, you know, and this is not to say, like, anything and everything is fair game in movies. There are movies that depict things that are bad. There are movies that handle sensitive topics poorly.
Right.
But ultimately, like, again, you can kind of moralize anything, and you can do it to whatever degree you want. You can watch the Pokemon movie and just go on a big PETA rant. You know, like, if you really want to,
watching a bunch of them lately, let me tell you.
Yeah, you can talk about how Ash is the villain and all the humans are the villains and Mewtwo's the only person in the right. But yeah, ultimately, like, at the end of the day, it's that question of like, it really is about your relationship to the media, and your willingness to kind of like develop that literacy and to be able to take a step back and recognize, like, I hate this for XYZ reasons. That doesn't make the movie a moral failure.
Right. Because, you know, I first started thinking about this a bunch of years ago when Licorice Pizza came out. It's not a movie I've ever seen. Largely, I don't really care for PTA movies generally, and it's not because of this. Yes, it's something I don't enjoy, but like, the thing that that movie started bringing this conversation up, or for me at least, and I feel like has been going on in the culture ever since, was like, that is a movie about an adult who is hitting on a child. And eventually, like, they do smooch. Like, that is just straight up what happens in this movie. And frankly, most PTA movies have some sort of quote unquote inappropriate age gap. And so, like, for me, I would be like, I will not see this movie because it is endorsing these inappropriate relationships, where, like, I had to be taught this concept around this movie of like, the movie might be depicting this as a positive thing, but it doesn't mean that the takeaway from the movie is meant to be that this is a good thing.
Yeah.
If you watch the movie with, and I have not seen it, so I can't speak to it specifically, but the concept is that if you watch this movie with intelligent eyes, you can recognize the ways that this relationship is inappropriate and unhealthy and bad. You can recognize the ways that it is titillating, the way that it is exciting, the way that, et cetera. But like, just because it's shown in a positive way overall doesn't, or even if it's not overall, I don't know, I haven't seen it, but even if it were, like, it is our job as the person watching it to recognize the difference between what is being depicted and what is reality. It's, and I, you know, I get caught up on it because PTA does this over and over again in his movies. There's always some sort of weird age gap, and I don't like watching it.
See, and that is where I can see people being like, hey, it's getting to a point that I no longer am okay with it.
Right. But I imagine he does it because it's some sort of fascination that he has, not because he thinks that this is like a good thing that we should be having in the world necessarily, especially the ones that are like outright not legal or appropriate. Right. Yeah. But like, he doesn't do it. I'm sure there's a reason why he finds it fascinating. That's not what this episode is about. I don't have to enjoy it, but like, it is important for me to recognize that just because I don't enjoy watching it necessarily doesn't mean that it makes the movie outright inappropriate, or it doesn't mean that it makes the whole thing spoiled because I don't get it or because I don't like watching it, because he's not doing it to say that this is good.
Yeah. Well, and I think the analogy that comes to mind, and you tell me if this is like too out of left field, war photography. You can take a well-composed photo of an atrocity that is not endorsing the atrocity.
Yeah.
If anything, it's commenting on the atrocity. Oh, and so, yeah, this idea of like, you put it in there and you made it too cool, or you made it too, what, it's like, no, like, that's, you have to dig a little deeper than that. Like, right. there are examples, like, I think one that comes to mind is The Godfather, where it's like, oh, you actually did make organized crime look really cool. Right, exactly. And that was maybe not great.
Right.
But like, it's like, yeah, you can take a really good picture of something horrible happening. It doesn't mean that you liked the horrible thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that it doesn't mean that the takeaway should be that the horrible thing looks good.
Right.
It's just that you are trying to showcase the horrible thing for people to examine.
Yeah, for all the problems I have with Civil War, as well documented on this podcast and on
not the Avengers film,
the Alex Garland movie from 2 years ago. Like, that's the whole point of that movie, at least in theory, right? Like, it is showing how even though the people taking these photos often become so over adrenalized by the experience of doing it that they themselves are like in it for the wrong reason, doesn't mean that the thing that they're producing exists for the wrong reason, because if they are still ultimately like consummate journalists, as theoretically these characters might be, or as we imagine that most people in real life are, which is more the example you're trying to give, like they might be in it themselves, like for the adrenaline junkie of it after a certain point. Like, famously, that is like what happens to so many war journalists and photographers, but like they're still professionals who are trying to capture something.
They're doing a job.
Important and with the least of their own self in it as possible. And so, like, no, it's a great example because they're not endorsing war by showing it.
Yeah,
that is for sure.
It's, you know, it's a weirdly like, I'm again looking at my movie shelf drawing inspiration. Maybe one of the better movies for handling, well, a better movie if you're gonna like be willing to put your brain into it for handling kind of like showing bad behavior without endorsing it, is Mean Girls. Because Girls is horrible behavior being combated with more horrible behavior. And at the end of it, someone learns a lesson and breaks a tiara into pieces and hands it out. But Regina George is still in a back brace.
Yeah.
Like, and look, it's at no point do they say like Katie learning her lesson made things better or undid everything wrong that she did. Not that she pushed Regina George in front of a bus. She didn't. But like, they don't say that breaking the tiara is magically undoing all of the bad things that happened. It's just showing that people are coming to a place of like forgiveness and understanding and moving forward. And it's like, oh, what a like delightfully morally gray film where like everyone's kind of terrible, but that's kind of the point.
Yeah, that movie's incredible. And there are plenty of people that certainly took the wrong lesson from it and were like, well, the plastics are so cool and I want to be them. And you know what? It's just our job to bully those people in real life the same way that they get bullied in that movie. Like, there will always be people that are taking the wrong lessons out of media, and it is just simply our responsibility to make sure that there are consequences for them in real life the same way that we want there to be consequences for them in the movies.
Yes.
And if you're going to be a bunch of shitty, clicky, pink-wearing people, then, you should have the same level. You should not be given a special level of respect that they are depicted with in the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't need to recreate that ourselves as the people who know better and did get the right lesson out of it. We should not be bystanders to it either, frankly. If you were getting the wrong lesson out of media, we should be relentlessly mocking you for it.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that really is just kind of it at the end of the day, is like, humans are complex as a people. There are people who will get the right thing out of something, people who will never understand it. People, you know, like everyone is going to approach art from their own perspective and they're going to get their own lessons. And I guess, yeah, not to sound like moralistic or fascist or anything, but it's like, yeah, there's a wrong lesson to get from movies. Like, that's just objectively true.
Yeah. I have really strong opinions and think that I'm correct, but like, when I'm not just bullshitting around, like, I completely respect and like crave the fact that other people have different opinions and experience with media and art. And like, it would be a shitty world to live in where everyone agreed with me all the time about like what we got out of things or how we enjoyed them. Mm-hmm. Like, I have my hard lines about things that I find interesting, appropriate, or valuable, but like, I also totally recognize where other people have a different perspective on it that's often equally valid, or that
yeah
like doesn't need to interact with my version of it, because we can just exist separately in how we feel about it.
Yeah.
Except I do want kids' movies to stop making prison a joke. That would be good.
Yeah, that I get that. Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's the other thing, is that there just are some things that, like, yes, there's a lot of room. There's so much room for difference of opinion. There are certain things that's like, no, we all need to kind of get on the same page with how we handle this topic or how we handle this thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, even that's the kind of thing where I will never not feel that way. I'm not like,
picketing outside of Paddington 3.
I can, clearly.
Or Paddington
2. But I'm not, like, I'm not upset with my friends who love Paddington 2 dearly. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm so glad you do. I can't, and I won't, and I will tell you why. But, like, it's not, I want to tell you why because I care. I don't want to tell you why because I want you to, I don't want to take away from your enjoyment of it, which actually it sucks. Like, those are two things that are actually really at odds with each other, where, like, it is never my goal to be, or it is not usually my goal to be, like, negative about something and want you to detract it from it for you. But, like, I also can't, if I don't tell you my opinion, then I'm not telling you my opinion. And it's up to you. Like, I want it to be up to you then to take my opinion and choose what to do with it as you will. But so often, and, you know, with friends, with real people, that is how it works. But so often in our culture, it is taken as like, oh, well, now you just ruined this forever for me because you told me that it was bad for this
yeah,
reason.
Or you
and
told, like, me that, yeah, here's the things
maybe you need the emotional maturity to be able to hold multiple truths. Or you just need to accept that I was correct and now I've changed your perspective and you should be grateful, not upset. But
yeah,
it's a challenging thing on the lower level sometimes, though, right? Of like, I don't want to take away from your love of this or diminish your sparkle on it, but I, like, this is how I feel, and it's tough sometimes.
Yeah. I remember in college talking to a guy about The Time Machine, and his, like, we both liked the story. Where we disagreed was that he had a really hard time enjoying, or he kind of thought you should only enjoy it as a commentary on working class exploitation. Sure. And I was like, no, I was like, I think it can just be a fun time travel story. Like, I was like, I'm not going to disagree that those elements are there. But I think if you think that H.G. Wells sat down and was like, I want to write a manifesto, but I'm going to disguise it as a sci-fi story, then maybe you're giving too much credit to the moral, or the morality that you found in it, or the themes that you found. Like, I don't know how many writers start with the theme and then build the story around it.
Yeah.
But he was very like, you can't divorce those. Like, it has to be this. And I was like, no, I like it because it's a sci-fi story.
Like, this is why in my movie watching and review presentation that I did for my friends this year, I included a section called Apologies, where I apologize to them for the things that I had opinions on that were different than theirs, like Paddington 3. And then there was a slide where I demanded their apologies for the things they were wrong about towards me.
Like, I love that.
Like, how one of my friends thought that sentimental value was soporific. And I think that's insane because I thought it was the best movie of this year, at least of a certain category. And, you know, sometimes we just need to demand and provide apologies about our differences of opinion and move on.
Yeah.
we're never going to agree about Paddington 3 or sentimental value, but we can joke about it and move
on. Yeah. It's the agree to, like, that literally the phrase agree to disagree exists for exactly this reason. And it's just, yeah, finding the times where, when is it good to agree to disagree? And I think episode of depiction and endorsement and how we engage with media and what lessons we pull from it it's an area, pick your battles, but, like, also recognize that some of these arguments are worth having. Like, if someone is like, yeah, I watched this movie and I thought that guy was cool as hell, and you're like, that guy's a dirtbag who killed a bunch of people. Like, there's nothing rewarding about that.
Right. Like, you know, the emotional piece of these conversations, the intellectual piece of these conversations, the artistic piece of these conversations, the political piece of these conversations, they are all related to each other, mm-hmm. but they also can be separate and distinct. Like we can,
yeah.
we can agree on something artistically and disagree about it politically.
Definitely.
Maybe that's different because politics are more important sometimes, but we can have separate perceptions of different aspects of our art and media, and have the conversations about these different pieces of it as separate conversations.
Definitely.
My opinion on the politics of a movie can be completely divorced from my opinion on the art of the movie. And that's important to do.
Yeah. And then there's that like total score at the bottom where you add the two together and you're like, do I think this is still good overall?
Yeah. And sometimes I might not with Paddington, but like, you know, sometimes my opinion on the politics of it might completely cancel out all of the other opinions I could have. That's valid if like, but usually it's because either of a tacit endorsement of something that the person making it didn't even understand they were doing, or it's mm-hmm. because they themselves just had a really shitty opinion that we should call out.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah.
Yeah. It's good to argue and to talk about things and to figure out what you think, what other people think. And yeah, like we always say on the show, be critical of media, think hard about it, like get literate.
Yeah. Get literate.
Read a
goddamn book, people.
I think for me that does it for this week. Are you all talked out on this one?
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, you at home listening, if you want more, we do have it. We are on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net. You can subscribe to our newsletter, which is free. Donate to the site, which is money, because that's how donations work, by going to butwhytho.net/support. Either of those actions helps the site keep going, helps us to keep the lights on, helps us to pay our writers, and we greatly appreciate it. Jason, thank you for joining me. I had a lot of fun with this conversation. I have a lot to think about. I'm going to go critique a bunch of movies and decide what I want to morally nitpick. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next time.
Nothing if not a moral nitpicker.